the cars go by and the clock ticks on, and I wait inside my small apartment, and the phone rings twice and the plant grows longer. Wait as the time rolls on and I'm hardly stronger. Oh, come in, sit down, then look around. This is my house.
All right, welcome here to the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton Pixton, and this is episode number 28. We are rolling right along here, tackling depression and anxiety to the ground. that's what we're trying to do. We really are, meaning that we're trying to understand it and trying to get a serious handle on it. I read all over the place that nobody understands what causes depression and anxiety. And to me, there's got to be, somebody's got to understand it. I guess my belief is that we can understand it, and not that every person's case is going to be the same. There are going to be different causes, but we can understand the backbone of it. We can understand the guts of it. We can understand it basically. And we can understand an individual case thoroughly. And I think we should. I think we should strive to. I don't think we need to overreach our bounds. I don't think we need to get overexcited or put out a theory before we're ready, claiming that it's true or whatever. But we can, I think, understand it a lot more than where we are today. And I think a big key of that is self-deception. I've said this many times. Self-deception is like a theme of just about every single podcast. What is self-deception? It's where you believe something that isn't true because you tell yourself that because you're justifying yourself for going against something that on some level you know is true. Okay? Now that's going to sound really, really, really mean for me to come out and say that as a cause for these really difficult mental challenges that in actuality are not the fault of the person like you might think from that description of self-deception. And we're doing the best we can, I guess, to describe it and talk about it in a way that's not condemning, because that's not, I don't think that's right. I don't think it's a matter of condemning anybody or judging anybody. But there's an element of personal responsibility we have in these things and an element of victimness in these things, and it's not really possible for us to judge how much of each there is in any case. But boy, even saying that, I really don't think it's a matter of condemning anybody for these mental challenges. Self-deception does happen on a level that the person may be culpable, you know, for something. That does happen. That's part of life. That's part of this world when we don't want to believe what's true that maybe comes to us from legitimate sources. And we're being lazy or otherwise are actually culpable, it's possible to convince ourselves that those things aren't important or that those things aren't true, right? And I addressed that in my second episode. I called it religious self-justification and self-deception. But that's a real thing, very much a real thing. As far as depression and anxiety go, I don't feel comfortable saying that that's something that we are responsible for. But if we can do anything about it, I don't think we're total victims either. And there we go. Is that a good enough introduction? So I always mention Terry Warner because he was kind of a mentor to me in college. I don't know that he considered himself that, but I took many classes from him at BYU, and he did a lot of work in self-deception, specifically as it relates to interpersonal relations, I would say. He imagined the thing we go against, or the light, as I would say, that we go against, something that kind of emanates from other people and that we can't escape it. And I think that's really on track. I would say it emanates from God. And he might say that too. Emanates from God, and it's inescapable, and here we are, and we can't escape it. And when we go against that, whether we know it or not, we self-deceive. And how mean is that to talk about anxiety and depression and schizophrenia and things like this in terms of something that we're doing wrong? Totally mean, totally mean. And I'm just trying to do it in the kindest way possible. That's all I know how to say. I don't quite know how to, how do I say that? I think we've got to go down that road, because if we don't, we leave a super big possibility of an explanation untouched, and we leave it behind because we're afraid of it. And I think it can help us. We just have to not worry about the condemnation part, or somehow we have to divorce ourselves of the inclination to condemn self-deceivers. It's like calling us sinners, right? Well, and as a matter of fact, we're all sinners. So, you know, people accuse Jesus of dining or whatever with sinners. And, you know, we're all imperfect. It's kind of a weird term. I'm not sure the Lord used the term sinners like we maybe tend to. I think because he understands that we're all, you know, we're all that. We're all imperfect. And there is a difference between those who are diligently striving to keep the commandments as they understand them, and those who know that they're not. There is a difference between that. Or otherwise, there'd be no such thing as righteousness or wickedness. And there are such things as those things. But we're not really talking about that so much. We're trying to understand how self-deception plays a role in things that we don't mean to do wrong, such as anxiety and depression, right? And schizophrenia, I guess, and dementia of other kinds. And I was just looking up on the internet about self-deception and seeing what it has to say. Why would I do that? Well, the internet is a great source if what you're looking for is the common understanding that's going around. If you're looking for what everybody thinks, the internet is a perfect source. That's exactly what you want, is Google. And now I know that it's not exactly perfect, and Google has the power, as some people might say, to, and it's true, you know, to manipulate their algorithm so that you don't get an accurate picture of what people think. But I'm not too worried about that in this case. So here we go. I'm going to read some of my notes. Hope you guys are doing well, by the way. We didn't really say hi at the beginning and just kind of blew right into it. But hope you're doing well. And yeah, it's a nice summer day for me, summer evening. Everybody's out of the house for a moment, so I'm taking the chance to do this. All right. Couple thoughts before we get into it. Wednesday, August 12th, 2020. Just read in Bill Bryson's book. That's his book is A Short History of Nearly Everything. That's one of his books. Just read in Bill Bryson's book how chemistry got on a firm footing with the invention of the periodic table. Psychology needs one of those. Seriously, can the principles of self-deception do this? I think they can help. I really think they can help. I think it's a big missing piece of the puzzle in psychology right now. What are some indubitable examples of self-deception? My first answer earlier in the podcast, earlier episodes that is depression and anxiety. Those are obvious examples of self-deception. But what's easier? From a distance, those ones seem pretty obvious. Their sufferers think they're generally worthless, or that something bad is always going to happen, respectively. Who thinks that? Depressed and anxious people. But come on, really, you're worthless? You realize that's not rational, right? No more worthless than anybody else. Plus, none of us is really worthless because God loves us with an infinite love. So right there, if that doctrine is true, the lie of depression is wrong. So really, your thoughts are delusional. Everybody should know and see from a mile away how delusional you are. But we don't see that so clearly, do we? Not sure why. I kind of wish we would. We should. Yeah, and then I say on another day, oh, how mean, saying people who struggle with mental illness are delusional. But it is true. We're all delusional, really. Oh, that I could expose that. So we're going to try to expose that. So speaking of Google, I went on Google and looked up common delusions. And when I do that, Google comes back and suggests to me, do you want common delusions in depression? Do you want common delusions in schizophrenia? Do you want common delusions in grandeur? Do you want common delusions in dementia? Do you want common delusions in bipolar? Do you want common delusions in Alzheimer's? In psychosis? So somebody's looking these things up, apparently, and they're looking for these delusions in these specific things because they or somebody they love, I guess, is experiencing what they see as delusions. Okay, let's look up delusions on the grand source of what everybody thinks, the internet. So I'm going to go from this little Wikipedia article. Somebody's at least taken a few moments to think about some different categories of delusions, and I think they're instructive. So let's think about this for a minute. And why are we thinking about this? Because we're looking at self-deception, and we're looking at common examples of self-deception, right? Because my first goal, I guess, is supposedly to convince people that there's such a thing as self-deception. And then my second goal, I guess, should be to convince people that, yeah, we all self-deceive, actually. And then I'll have to go on, I guess, from there and try to make sense of it and try to show that there's a pattern to it and that the best explanation for it is that we must be going against a light that we have at all times. That's my kind of plan, I guess. So here's some themes of self-deception. At least that's what they're calling it. Let's back up a little and go to types of self-deception. Why not? There's bizarre delusions, and there's non-bizarre delusions. So obviously bizarre delusions are ones that appear bizarre to everybody, and non-bizarre ones are ones that are could be possibly credible, but probably aren't the case. And I would say we're all deluding ourselves all the time. It's just part of life. And I guess they're non-bizarre because people can believe them, but really we should recognize them more. Anyway, all right, here we go. Themes. Now, this is from Wikipedia, but okay, the article is called Delusion. Here's the themes of delusion. Delusion of control, meaning like somebody's controlling your thoughts or your feelings or your behavior. Cotard delusion, false belief that one does not exist or that one has died. I've never heard of that one. Delusional jealousy, false belief that a spouse or lover is having an affair with no proof to back up their claim. Delusion of guilt or sin, or delusion of self-accusation, ungrounded feeling of remorse or guilt, of delusional intensity. Delusion of mind being read, false belief that other people can know one's thoughts. Delusion of thought insertion, belief that another thinks through the mind of the person. Delusion of reference, the false belief that insignificant remarks, events, or objects of one's environment have personal meaning or significance. Usually the meaning assigned to these events is negative, but the messages can also have a grandiose quality. That isn't a very good description. Delusions of reference. Innocuous events or mere coincidences and believe they have strong personal significance. It is the notion that everything one perceives in the world relates to one's own destiny. Okay, that's a little better. That's from the article on delusions of reference. Erotomania or erotomania, false belief that another person is in love with them. Religious delusion, belief that the affected person is a god or chosen to act as a god. That's not the best description either. It goes beyond that. And it's a delusion involving religious themes or subject matter. This is funny. Though some psychologists have characterized all or nearly all religion as delusion, sounds about right, most focus solely on a denial of any spiritual cause of symptoms exhibited by a patient and look for other answers relating to a chemical blah, blah, blah. I can't read the rest, but that's funny that some. All right, moving on. Somatic delusion, delusion whose content pertains to bodily functioning, bodily sensations, or physical appearance. Usually the false belief that the body is somehow diseased, abnormal, or changed. Okay. Delusion of poverty. Person strongly believes that they are financially incapacitated. And grandiose delusions. Somehow it's a little different part of this main list. Delusions of grandeur or expansive delusions are a subtype of delusion that occurs in patients suffering from a wide range of psychiatric diseases, including two-thirds of patients in manic state or of bipolar disorder, half of those with schizophrenia, patients with a grandiose subtype of delusional disorder, and a substantial portion of those with substance abuse disorders. GDs, grandiose delusions, are characterized by fantastical beliefs that one is famous, omnipotent, wealthy, or otherwise very powerful. The delusions are generally fantastic and typically have a religious, science fictional, or supernatural theme. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's grandiose delusions. All right, does that give us a little example of what's out there, or what the common thought is for delusions? And I'm here to tell you that here's an example that I'm going to offer. Anytime you are angry with someone, maybe not anytime, but often when you are angry at someone, you consider that person to be mean, irrational, idiotic. As Terry Warner said, immature people consider that other people aren't real. To the immature, other people aren't real. I think that was the thing he read as a young person. Other people aren't real. Or in other words, I guess I'd say, other people aren't rational. They're not human. They're not, something's wrong with them. They're idiot. Okay, you know what I mean, right? You've been in an argument before, or been mad at somebody outside of an argument. You felt those feelings, and I'm here to tell you that they're not right. I'm not saying that it's not right to be angry with people ever, because I believe that sometimes it is. There's such a thing as, you know, righteous anger, I guess. But it's not the type that considers other people not to be real and considers them to be imbeciles and just evil through and through. People do evil things, and there is such thing as wickedness, right? And there's such thing as people doing something wrong, and there's such thing as people wronging you. And you should be angry at that. If something in you doesn't, you know, rise up against that, something's wrong with you. And there is something wrong with some of us, right? Because we don't do that. But when you consider the other person to be an imbecile and not rational, you get where I'm going? Okay. So those are some examples of self-deception from the internet and then from me. And then I would say there are many more, and I would go from there. Well, let's back up. So what I just said, does that resonate with everybody? Are there any arguments that those delusions exist? I mean, do those people just seem weird to you? What's your assessment of that? I guess that's a start, at least, of me trying to illustrate how there are these delusions in the world. They exist. They're well known. Okay? And then start to move towards the idea that, and actually, we all have delusions. Jealousy delusion. Delusion of guilt or sin. Have you ever felt guilty about something that turns out you didn't need to feel guilty about? Well, isn't that a Isn't that basically a light version of that delusion? Maybe it's not an ongoing one, but maybe it is. And it could be little or it could be big. That's the way I see things. I don't see it as, yeah, this is the DSM, the psychologically recognized, you know, disorder. You have a disorder or you don't. To me, there's gray area all up and down that continuum. To me, it's a continuum. And we all partake of it in one degree or another. That's how I see it. I don't think it's just an either or, and I don't think any reasonable person would say it is. If you think somebody likes you, but they really don't, isn't that just a light version of the delusion erotomania, false belief that another person is in love with you, or delusional jealousy? The false belief that a spouse or lover is having an affair with no proof to back up their claim. I mean, it would be pretty easy to have that thought cross your mind, depending on the relationship you're in, I guess. And if it's motivated in any way, I mean, isn't that a delusion if it sticks in any way that when you have no proof of it? I'm not saying that doesn't happen, because it absolutely does, but I'm talking about the situation where there is no reason to think that, right? I'm just trying to illustrate how all these things have a lighter version, right? Is anybody saying that? I don't read that very much, but I'd like to see it somewhere. Surely people understand that there's a continuum on all these things, and there's light versions of all this stuff. Okay. Well, let me talk about depression and anxiety for a second and what those thoughts are, and maybe illustrate how we all feel them to some degree and think them to some degree. So if you're depressed, we've kind of figured out that you, in a way, are not forgiving yourself. You are believing that you're not worth it. You're not worthy. You're not worthy of love, that either you're bad or you're just a loser. You know, that whole line of thought, that's depression. And you're not treating yourself right. If there's such a thing as treating yourself the same way you treat another person, well or bad, you're treating yourself bad. And the way to justify that in a way is that you don't think much of yourself. That's what depression is to me, if I'm understanding it right. So don't we all have moments that we think lowly of ourselves? Isn't that a lie that we all buy into to a certain extent? Here and there, now and then, if not more often. You hear me, right? We know this is true. What about anxiety? Now, there are people who suffer from acute anxiety as well, like they do with acute depression and acute schizophrenia and anything else. But there are people who suffer from acute anxiety. And anxiety is the idea that it's not going to work out, that it's going to be really bad. Things are going to go poorly for you in the future, that you're going to suffer, your reputation's going to be damaged, or you're going to get hurt, or, you know, you're going to lose your job, or any number of things, relationship thing, any number of things that could possibly go bad, death, anything. And it's a false belief about that. And it's a motivated belief about that. It's not just a random, oh, a semi-truck is headed straight for me. Something bad's going to happen. I have anxiety. I really don't think that's what we're talking about, because that's justified. We're talking about when it's not justified, right? We're talking about the lie of anxiety. And maybe, like we said in an earlier podcast, maybe anxiety, maybe fear, it's all kind of the same thing. It's not good or bad. It's not wrong or right, but the idea might be motivated. It might be wrong or right that things are going to turn out poorly. And, you know, it can be motivated. What can I say? So my point being that that can be acute. You can have like a persistent feeling like that, that you just can't shake or is very difficult to get away from and find relief from. Or it can be a come and go kind of thing. Or it can be just a once in a while thing because you're a normal person. And if you don't have some false anxiety, you're probably going too far in some other way, right? You're probably not fearing enough, I guess. So continuum. That's what I'm telling you. Continuum. Everything. All right. Well, it's been a great podcast. Glad you could join me. We'll close out with that song I did. That song is called Come In, and I wrote it years ago in New York City. I'll let you figure out what it's about. It's not too hard to figure out, I guess, but it was during a difficult time. I had mono. Like I said, glad you could join me. I'm Clayton Pixon. This is the Should Be Known podcast, episode number 28. And I hope you have a great day. Here's Come In.
As the cars go by and the clock ticks on, and I wait inside my small apartment, and the phone rings twice and the plant grows longer. Wait as the time rolls on and I'm hardly stronger. Oh, come in, sit down, then look around. This is my house. Can you stay long and can we talk? I hardly see anyone. As the years roll on and as I get old, and my friends are far and as if forgotten, and in this new place I could use some new ones. Why must you go so soon was what I said wrong. Oh, come in, sit down, then look around. This is my house. Can you stay long and can I hardly see anyone. Come right in, sit right down, down with me on the ground. Leave your coat where it is. Don't just talk, but sometimes listen. I'll try hard to be me and be good company and not judge what I see. If I'm not, please forgive me. Please don't leave. And as I walk down my quiet sidewalk, I see a young man I've seen before. Standing by himself, he looks so lonely. I can pretend I hear him say so clearly. Yeah. Oh, come in, sit down, then look around. This is my house. Can you stay long and can we talk? I hardly see anyone.
sit right down, down with me on the ground. Leave your coat where it is. Don't just talk, but sometimes listen. I'll try hard to be me and be good company and not judge what I see. If I'm not, please forgive me. Please don't leave. Please don't leave.